Hello, this is Bare Naked Politics. This is not any ordinary politics podcast. It's not one of these ones where you kind of have to be some sort of expert to follow what's happening. It's the opposite of that. This is where you want to come to have somebody just explain the news to you. And if you find the kind of all the politics stuff really dry and really hard to keep up with, this is your podcast. I'll just strip it back and make sense of it. I'm Julia Bell, and before I get going, I'm just going to ask you a favour. Please will you click subscribe or follow, depending on what platform you're listening on. If you're listening on Spotify, click follow for me, and that does me a world of good. So thank you for that. And look, if you've heard this podcast before, you know it's all driven by your questions. So if you've messaged me on social media and you're confused about something or you want to hear, you know, what's happening, that's how I dictate what I'm talking about. So if you want to get involved, you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter. It's the same handle, at @JuliaBell_X. Send me a DM, ask, you know, tell me what you're confused about, and or just talk to me. And I'll talk you through it. And this week, there was no issue deciding what to talk about because everyone was asking me about Priti Patel. If you don't know much about her, she's the Home Secretary of the Prime Minister's cabinet. So she's basically one of the most powerful people in the government. In fact, in the country, she's one of the most powerful people in the country. She's a big time Brexiteer, is Priti Patel. She's like Queen Vote Leave. And one of her biggest things that she's in charge of and that she wants to do is to just clamp down on immigration. That's her thing, is like basically make it harder for people to get in. And if they want to get in, they've got to have like a reason, a good reason for doing so. But to add to her profile, this like quick summary, it turns out this week, according to this recent report, she's got a bit of a flair for bullying and shouting and swearing at her staff. Also, of all the weeks for this story to break, it's broken on anti-bullying week. You love to see it. You love to see it. You can't write this stuff. So I want to walk you through what this report said, what it means, and why the guy who wrote it has now resigned. It's all kicking off. And it was only last week that I did an episode about the drama with Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's chief advisor, who walked out, well, he stormed out of Downing Street holding a box of all of his stuff. That was only, you know, what, one or two episodes ago. So, yeah, the government are really getting into the Christmas spirit early and kind of acting like this big dysfunctional family that you'd see on an episode of Hollyoaks or something. All right, so let's kind of talk you through the Priti Patel drama. Basically, when an MP gets promoted to being a minister on the cabinet and they get given like a huge department and it's such a big responsibility, like it's the mother of all promotions, you have to, when you get promoted to that role, you have to agree to abide by the ministerial code, which sounds kind of sexy and like secretive. It's not at all. It's actually just like a list of rules. It's been around since the Second World War, at least, but you're expected to quit if you breach it. That's the etiquette, right? Like, if you don't abide by it, then you're meant to resign. And the thing is, this ministerial code has a foreword on it that's written and signed by Boris Johnson. So he's kind of added his own interpretation to it and his own, like, you know, these are extra things that we need to bear in mind. So he's stuck something on the front. And one of the things that he mentions in that, as clear as day, is about, in fact, let me quote it exactly. I've got it here. Yeah. There must be no bullying and no harassment, no leaking, no breach of collective responsibility, no misuse of taxpayer money, and no actual or perceived conflicts of interest. So those are Boris Johnson's words. There must be no bullying and no harassment, right? He wrote those himself and then signed it and stuck it on top of the ministerial code. And in Priti Patel's case, there was just so many claims of bullying within her department. I mean, it's been going on for ages as well. I remember Jeremy Corbyn having a go at her about it back when he was the leader of the Labour Party. So this has been like an ongoing thing. And it happened so many times. You were even seeing like resignations from the most senior members of staff. One guy said, like, he was like the most senior guy. And he said that Priti Patel created a culture of fear. That was the word he used, was fear, for how she operated. So it got to a point where an independent review needed to be conducted to see if she was seriously breaching the ministerial code. And the guy who led that inquiry was Sir Alex Allen. Remember that name, Sir Alex Allen, because he's kind of the most important person in this story, other than Priti Patel, obviously. He's a civil servant, so he's not a part of the Conservative Party. He's not an MP. He's not an elected person. He's purely there to look at whether the code was being breached by Priti Patel as like an independent review. He didn't have an agenda to make her look good or to make her look bad. He's literally just a neutral person. And all he did was investigate, right, is there bullying going on? And therefore, are you breaching the code? And basically, his report that was ongoing, it went on for months, his report concluded that yes, bullying is definitely happening. In fact, let me read you the quote again. It's good to be specific. So the report said, "The Home Secretary's approach on occasions has amounted to behaviour that can be described as bullying in terms of the impact felt by individuals. To that extent, her behaviour has been in breach of the ministerial code, even if unintentionally." So it's gentle in that it gives her an out of saying like, oh, maybe you didn't know you were bullying people. Accidental bullying. And there's kind of other parts of the report that say like, oh, it's understandable within the context. She has a really hard job. She hasn't always necessarily felt supported by her staff. And that might have resulted in this behaviour. But nevertheless, she broke the code. We've got to call a spade a spade. The ministerial code has been breached. It says that in black and white. And here's the thing. Priti Patel, in the past, has completely denied these claims. This bullying thing's been around for a while and she's just never really given it any airtime. She's never really acknowledged it. But when this report came out, she had to face it head on.
I'm here to give an unreserved apology today. And I am sorry if I have upset people in any way whatsoever. That was completely unintentional. And Vicky, I'll be very candid. You know, the work that I do here in this department and across government is deeply challenging. So if I have upset people, that has been completely unintentional. That was not my intention.
So that was Priti Patel's voice there. And she isn't saying I didn't bully people. She isn't denying it, is she? She's saying, sorry. I'm sorry if that's the effect that I had. I didn't mean it, kind of thing. So from that, from her basically admitting like, oh yeah, the report's right, maybe I was bullying people, I just naturally assumed that, oh, okay, she's got to go. She's going to have to resign because that's the etiquette. If you breach the ministerial code, then you've relinquished your responsibility. You've shown that you're not worthy of the role because you can't keep to the etiquette. But Boris Johnson came to her rescue immediately. He didn't like mull it over. He just immediately came to her rescue and essentially ignored the report. Let me read you the Downing Street statement about it. So it said, "The Prime Minister is reassured that the Home Secretary is sorry for inadvertently upsetting those with whom she is working. Having considered Sir Alex's advice and weighing up all the factors, the Prime Minister's judgment is that the ministerial code was not breached." So it's a bit weird. Like, Boris Johnson commissioned this independent advisor to tell him whether or not the code was being breached. The advisor said, yeah, I've done all this work, I've spoken to all of these people, and I have concluded that it is being breached. And then the Prime Minister's gone, I don't think it is. Like, what? So Johnson's backing Patel, and she gets to keep her job. That's the simple kind of, you know, all in all of it. She doesn't have to go anywhere because he's letting her stay. And not just that, but Boris Johnson sent a WhatsApp message to his kind of group of Tory MPs saying that they needed to, and this is a quote, "form a square around the Pritster." Form a square around the Pritster. What a nickname, the Pritster. And then immediately after he sent that message, he just couldn't avoid seeing Conservative MPs popping up on the telly and on Twitter all over the place, just saying how brilliant she was and how they'd never witnessed bullying in their lives from her. You know, she was amazing at her job, and we all need to support her. So they really did form that square around the Pritster. Go figure. So that's the story as far as Boris Johnson and Downing Street are concerned. We don't think she breached the code. She gets to keep her job. But Sir Alex Allen, the civil servant who conducted this whole review, was sort of looking at it going, well, excuse me, you commissioned me to do this. You asked me if the code was being breached. I told you it is, and you're ignoring the verdict anyway. He wasn't that sassy. He's not sassy at all, actually. But he did resign. So he did kind of take a stand about this. So now we're kind of in a position where a bit of a dodgy precedent has been set. Like, all of the ministers have agreed to this code, but if there's loads of complaints and then an independent inquiry is needed, and then that inquiry concludes that they're breaching the code, literally nothing happens. So does that mean, really, that the ministerial code becomes less of a code and more of like an opt-in scheme if you want to, like take part if you feel like it. Also, one of the Prime Minister's main justifications for sort of shrugging this whole thing off was that the Home Secretary didn't intentionally upset anyone. That was kind of something they clung to, like, oh, she didn't really realise that she was upsetting people, so it's fine. But that's been challenged as well. Remember I said that certain members of Patel's most senior civil servant staff had claimed she was a bully as far back as summer last year, summer 2019. And that was a matter of weeks after she started the job that they were saying, actually, this person's a bully. One name to remember is Sir Philip Rutman, who left her staff in February. He was like one of the most senior roles you can get within the Home Office, sort of within the civil servant staff. And since Alex Allen released this conclusion, Sir Philip Rutman's come out and said, hang on, you're saying that she never had it fed back to her that she was a bully and that she didn't know she was doing it, but I tried to tell her loads of times. He gave a statement, actually, to the BBC about this, and it's pretty fucking damning about Priti Patel, what it say. Yeah, here it is. As early as August 2019, the month after Priti Patel's appointment, she was advised that she must not shout and swear at staff. I advised her on a number of further occasions between September 2019 and February 2020 about the need to treat staff with respect. So that was his statement to the BBC. And he's basically saying, look, this report's coming out saying that, oh, maybe she didn't mean it and it's all very high pressured and nobody told her, so how could she have known? And he's saying, I told her. I don't know what you're talking about. I really wonder what the staff feel about all this. Like, I wonder if there's people who obviously still work there who Sir Alex Allen will have interviewed and spoken to. I wonder if they're thinking, oh, great, you know, we came clean to this guy and told him that we're being bullied. And nothing's happening anyway. So now there's going to be all this awkwardness because she's going to know that we kind of grasped on her. And actually, speaking of the staff, my best mate, Natasha, who I've been, you know, really good friends with for about 10 years, she used to work for the civil service. It was under a different department. It was the Department of Culture, Media and Sport was the secretary that she worked under. So a different department to Priti Patel's. But still, she used to call me fairly regularly in tears. And I remember, like, she won't mind me saying this, I remember, you know, many a night of drinking a bottle of rosé and having a bit of a moan about how stressful it was. But I thought that she was stressed about the job and about the pressures of it and about the workload and all the rest of it. But I wondered when this story came out, was there kind of more to it and was there a bit of a culture of bullying? So I asked her if she would kindly come on and talk to me about what she thought of all of this. Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm enjoying my Sunday.
Oh, happy anti-bullying week, by the way.
Oh my gosh, love it.
So you've worked as a civil servant and a policy advisor, different department, so I don't imagine that you've ever worked under Priti Patel. But considering you've done the same job or near enough as the people who are supposedly being bullied, were you surprised when this report came out, or is it kind of regular practice for people to like shout and swear within politics?
I think working for the civil service is still, there's still that culture of you've got that stiff upper lip. It's still very British and traditional. Like if it was, you know, this kind of shouting, swearing thing, it wouldn't have been done in public or, you know, out on the corridors in the department. You would have probably heard it in an office. But, I mean, I'm not surprised.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
Why do you say that?
Because, so if you think about it, like yourself, civil servants have to be neutral when they deliver advice to ministers because you have to give the full picture. You can't just say, this is what we agree on. They provide options to ministers. And ministers have to also, they have their own opinion, right? They have their commitment to their party, to the people, but also to themselves. So if they don't like some advice, they can get annoyed. And then the advice changes because you are catering to the whims of the minister. Right. And you would assume the civil service is completely neutral, but there can be intimidation. And it's very intimidating going to speak to a minister because they're a minister. And civil servants often have to provide advice that tailors to what the minister would like to hear. And there's a reason why I left the civil service. And it was because of, not just because of bureaucracy, but because of the culture there where you could feel intimidated.
Did you feel like you fitted in?
Being Asian British and a Duke, because I had a quite, I didn't have like a, you know, a top role in the civil service. I felt like a real minority. And obviously, you know this because, you know, we've been best friends for ages and I've taken you through my journey there. But
tears, there were tears.
They were many tears. And I felt like a real minority. I felt like I'd started on the back foot because a lot of people were educated in the same place or spoke in a certain way. And I thought I had, but actually their perception of me was slightly different. And it was this unconscious bias they had of me because of who I was. There was one girl and she walked past me, I've met her before, and she was like, "Oh, Gayatri, I'll see you soon in the next half an hour." And I looked at her and I go, "We've met before. You assume that I was Gayatri because I was a brown woman. You know, I was Asian. They're not loads of us, right? So you just assume that." And that was the kind of, that was the nature of civil service. And so right. I think there, in comparison to university and in comparison to when I was working in the corporate world, that was where I felt most alone and most like a minority. So I really do want brown women to go into politics and go into the civil service and change the dynamic and represent what they believe in. But do we do that by changing the way people view us and changing our personalities and not being nice and not being kind? Do we do it that way? And unfortunately, Priti Patel has done it that way. She's made herself this strong, impenetrable person with the backing of Boris Johnson to get to that position. You don't get to that position by crying like me every day in the toilet.
But the people who defend Priti Patel are sort of saying, look, it's such a high-pressured environment. Of course you're going to have explosive moments. And she's going through a lot trying to deliver on tough promises that the party made to the voters. So is there room to, I guess, forgive shitty behaviour or even, you know, in really high-stress environments, just kind of redefine what's acceptable in terms of how you speak to people sometimes?
No, bullying's bullying. So yeah. You can't change the definition of something just because, you know, of an environment, of a change of environment. It's still, you're in a playground shouting at people because they're not doing what you want them to do. Being in a high-pressured job doesn't mean you have to be an arsehole.
That's what, like in workplaces where they have inspirational quotes and posters, that should be one of them. Doesn't matter how high-pressured it is, don't be an arsehole. Has this whole thing kind of affected you differently? Because not only is Priti Patel a woman, who's probably the most high up woman in politics at the moment, but she's also Asian British, as are you.
Yes, I definitely think it's a really challenging thing because, like, on one hand, I'm like, it's really good that we've got an Asian British woman in politics, so high up. When I switch on the TV and I see her, and if I was young and watching her, she looks like me. I could be that. You know, it's that thing. But then on the flip side, she doesn't represent my policy, my values, all the way I think. It's like
she's almost carrying more pressure on her back because there's so few British Asian women that high up in politics. So you're sort of thinking, oh, can you please be a good egg? Because you're kind of representing a lot of us and now you're a massive bully. So that's more disheartening in a way.
We're rooting for an Asian British woman to kind of do well in politics. We also have to understand what she's representing.
You're the child of two immigrants.
Yeah.
From two different countries.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it weird to see, you know, someone who, like you say, looks like you and kind of represents you on paper, her whole reason for being is being tough on immigration. That's her role within the Home Office. That's the Conservatives' manifesto promise, is we're going to get tougher on immigration. And on simple terms, we're going to let less people in. Is that weird for you?
It's, weirdly enough, that concept's not weird for me to understand because of the debates I've had with my parents. So my parents actually were quite conservative when they came to the UK because when my mother came, Margaret Thatcher was in power. Mm-hmm. And And because of that, there was a lot of like housing chances, you know, to get on the housing ladder and things like that. And when you're young and you get given those opportunities, those things, you remember them. And so when you're older and you have those opportunities or you've made it, like for example, my parents literally came from nothing. Like my dad came from war and my mom, she was 16 when she came here. So really both like different situations, but they came in when they were young.
And they're really self-made. They've done great.
They're really self-made. Mm-hmm. And that definitely changes how you view opportunity in the UK. So if you're a successful migrant, you're not going to be like, oh, the Tories are rubbish and they've done nothing for me. So my parents are like, well, sometimes maybe we do need to limit migration. I'm like, but you two came. What? And I don't understand because our views clash completely. But what I'm trying to kind of get at is, if you come to the UK and you're quite young and you build yourself up and you're now in a position where you may have wealth or status or some sort of power, then you're less likely to disagree with a policy that benefits you.
Mm-hmm. But also your mum, if she came at 16, did she have a degree?
No, she got her degree here.
She wouldn't have got in under Priti Patel's strategy, because Priti Patel's saying, look, we're going to have a checklist of things and you've got to tick off, so you've got to have some sort of vocation, or if you've got to have something to offer, we're not just going to let people in who will have to start here. So technically your mum wouldn't have got through the border.
I know. And like, I suppose explaining that to someone now, it's like, well, I'm not in that stage now, so it doesn't really matter to me. But you know, like, she may say if I had this conversation with her, because you know, I'm not with her right now. So imagine she listens and she's like, what?
Thanks for portraying me so nicely.
But I think I'm trying to, I suppose, say that a lot of British Asians might agree with Priti Patel because of their status now. And I know after the Second World War and a lot of Commonwealth countries came to the UK and really did, like Asian kind of Indian families, especially from India or like Uganda, Kenya, they came to the UK and they really were working really hard. Their children were doing really well at school. And now it's 2020, which is quite a while away, and they've built up like their small empire.
Yeah.
A lot of Tory policies benefit them. But if you're a migrant coming in today, that's very, very different circumstance, because you're entering into a justice system, but also a system where you're viewed as a bit of a criminal, a bit of a leech on resources, and you haven't got anything.
It's not the same. It's not the same ladder. The ladder's much slipperier. It's missing quite a lot of stairs. Yeah,
exactly. And for me, I'm lucky I'm born here, because if I was coming here, I wouldn't have the same opportunity.
But maybe that's Priti Patel's viewpoint, is like, look, I was born in the UK. Is it so bad to have that viewpoint of, I'm going to protect my country and my voters and the people that are already here? That's my job. And it doesn't matter if my ancestors are from somewhere else. I am in this position of power to do what we said we would do for the voters. What relevance is it that I've got brown skin? And I wonder if like her sort of tougher views on immigration are treated harshly in comparison to if she was a white guy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. There's really no winning.
There isn't winning. And, you know, to have a British Asian woman who is so bullish or a bully and strong just completely goes against the standard stereotype of Asian women, which are
right,
submissive and are in a culture which oppresses them, you know. Yeah. There's still that viewpoint that they're in a culture that oppresses them. And, you know, because I'm Muslim, so definitely more so for someone like me, where I've been told that my community is oppressive. And they're surprised that I could speak a certain way, or I could challenge, or I could debate because of my identity of being a Muslim British woman. Because wasn't I told what to do at home by my dad? Mm-hmm. You know, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's really so many layers to it. But unpacking feelings and understanding what that person represents in politics is really, really important.
Well, thank you. I love you.
I love you too.
I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye. So that was Tash. I love how candid she is. I just love people who really don't mind about, like, you know, sharing their vulnerabilities, let's say that. It's just great. She's such a laugh. And we went on a bit of a tangent there. We ended up talking about immigration, but actually that is such a key topic when it comes to Priti Patel. You can't really talk about her without it coming up because that is her whole thing. On the Conservative Manifesto at the end of last year, which is, you know, something that won the voters over by a landslide, was their stance on Brexit, get Brexit done, you know, be tougher on immigration. These were their key policy concepts. That immigration thing is her baby. Toughening the borders is all Priti Patel. It's what she's handling. And she's saying, let's have this point-based immigration system. In other words, I mean, it sounds pretty simple, so it's exactly what you'd imagine. You can't come here unless you score enough points on our kind of list of criteria. So it might be like, oh, your skills are needed, or it might be that you have an employer that wants you to move here, so you've already got a job lined up. Whatever it is, you can't just start from scratch, or it's very rare that you can, especially if you don't have any fluency in English and those sort of things. So it's a controversial policy. A lot of people think it's hateful, but it won a huge amount of voters over. So part of her job, or a big part of her job as Home Secretary, has been to see that through and to deliver that. And kind of Natasha was alluding to this. I remember listening to, it was LBC Radio, about 9 months ago. And Priti Patel was on with Nick Ferrari, who kind of likes a good debate. And he was probing her about, you know, is it a bit hypocritical that the child of two immigrants has such a strict immigration policy? Have a listen to this.
The side of my family on my father's side were in catering, so I don't know if I'd actually be in this country under these rules. Would you, with your parents?
This isn't about my background or my parents.
But it's interesting. Would you have qualified? Would your parents, I understand, came from Uganda and then were very successful in setting up news agents? They wouldn't have qualified, would they?
This is a very different system to what has gone on in the past. And don't forget, this is a points-based system based on the labour market. Yeah, but also, let's not forget, Nick, we're not changing our approach to refugees and asylum seekers, which is very different to a points-based system for employment and that particular route.
But it's quite interesting, isn't it? I wouldn't be sitting in my studio and you wouldn't be Home Secretary, one of the biggest offices in the land, under your system.
But the policies are changing. This is the point. We are changing our immigration policy, one that is fit for purpose for our economy, that is based on skills.
So there you go. That was Priti Patel on LBC about 9 months ago. And it was classic Patel. Tough on immigration, despite the fact that the very system she's putting forward probably wouldn't have let her own parents in the country, which is very, it is an interesting outlook, but that's where she stands on it. And at the end of the day, she has a mandate because the Conservatives won by a huge amount and she won her own seat by a huge amount. So she is a popular politician in that sense. And there is no taking that away from her. Okay, before I wrap up then, lots of you on Instagram have asked for more information about her. Just on her career and kind of how she got to where she is. So let's just give you a quick rundown so you feel really clued up. So she is, firstly, the most devoted, lifelong conservative. She loves the Tories, right? She joined the party as a teenager. She's a big fan of Margaret Thatcher. She kind of sees her as a personal hero or a personal heroine. And her values, you know, within the Conservative Party, there is a scale of how right-wing you are. It's obviously, it sits right of the middle, but then how right-wing you are, it varies. And for Priti Patel, she's pretty far right within that party. She's like quite far right up that scale. So for instance, she's voted against gay marriage, which I don't care what you say, that is not on. She used to support the death penalty. That is a right-wing outlook, although I think it's a bit more of an interesting debate than gay marriage, because gay marriage, there is a right and a wrong to that. But death penalty, she used to be in support of that. She's changed her mind on that since. Her dad, this is an interesting fact about her, her dad stood as a UKIP councillor 7 or 8 years ago. So she's from pretty far right-wing stock, if you will. She's Indian Ugandan. I think they mentioned that on the LBC show. So she's got Gujarati parents, but they were from Uganda. They moved to the UK. She was, of course, born in Britain. And the majority of her career has been about serving the Tory party. She's like, she's not just kind of walked into this recently. When she was, like I say, she was a teenager, she joined the party. And then as soon as she graduated, she interned at the Tory HQ. So she went straight in. She knew what she wanted to do. And then in the 1990s, she ran the press office at the referendum party. That's what they were called, the referendum party, which was just like a single issue party, you call it, which is where they only care about one thing. And the referendum party were all about Brexit. And this is back in the 1990s. This is like 1994. And their whole thing was, let's get a referendum to get us out of the EU. So she's been a Eurosceptic for longer than I've been alive. Like, she has been on this brigade to get Brexit done. So you can't say she's not committed. And then she became a Tory MP in 2010. I think she tried to run in 2005, but she didn't. She lost to the Labour candidate. But then David Cameron kind of spotted her. And he was like, ah, I like you. You've got something to offer. So let's move you to a seat where we know the Conservatives will win. Because I want to work with you. So they moved her to a seat in Essex, which was like a safe seat. So they knew she would win it. And she's been obviously an MP ever since 2010. And then before the whole, I said this earlier, I think, but before the whole bullying thing that came out recently, she's still not had a squeaky clean, kind of scandal-free record. I remember she kind of became a household name, first of all, for all the wrong reasons, in November 2017. She was on, it was Theresa May, obviously, was the head of the Conservative Party back then. She was on Theresa May's cabinet, so she'd worked her way up, and she was the International Development Secretary. And a story broke. This is so nuts, this story. I don't know if you remember. A story broke that she'd gone to Israel. And it was supposedly a holiday. She'd just gone there on her jollies. But it became apparent she'd actually been meeting with, like, the Israeli prime minister and loads of Israeli officials and diplomats and all sorts. And she'd basically been representing the British government abroad without telling anyone. Like, she didn't tell the prime minister. So Theresa May thought that Priti Patel was in Israel, which probably didn't even know. She thought Priti Patel was away on her jollies. And actually, Priti Patel's there shaking hands with all these important people, making deals and planning things without Theresa May having a fucking clue. How nuts is that? And then the press broke it before Theresa May found out. So she had to find out because the BBC broke the story. So Theresa May called Priti Patel into Downing Street, obviously furious about the whole thing. Because that's just not the done thing. You don't pretend you're on holiday and then go on official government international business. That's just not okay. But when Theresa May called her into Downing Street the first time, Priti Patel got away with it. She just kind of explained herself and Theresa May kind of said, okay, don't do that again. But then a few days later, it came out that Priti Patel had been having all sorts of secret meetings. She'd been to New York and she'd had meetings in London, again, with all these Israeli officials without declaring them. So at that point, when that came out, Theresa May was like, actually, you've got to go. This is not on. Just don't trust Patel if she goes on her jollies. That's the lesson to take away from that. But yeah, obviously, you know, Priti Patel had to stand down from the cabinet. She still got to be an MP. She didn't get like kicked out of the party. She became just a backbencher. So she kind of became like a regular MP that didn't have any power beyond that particularly. And then, of course, when Johnson took over from Theresa May, then Priti Patel was like straight in with the big boys again, because her and Boris Johnson are big allies. They're mates. Especially if he's calling her the Pritster on WhatsApp, you know, you can't be surprised that she kind of popped up on his cabinet in such a high role when he took over things. Okay, I think that's enough Priti Patel for one day. Lots of you are a bit confused why she kept her job when the precedent is to sack people when they break the code. And I get that that's confusing, but remember, we're talking about Boris Johnson here. He is not the one to stick to the rules. It's just not what, I mean, even the rules that he writes, technically, he wrote the rules this time and he's breaking them. But also remember, I think something we've got to bear in mind is the timing of this, because we've got a month and a week until the transition period for Brexit is over and until we are officially out of the EU and everything changes. And Priti Patel is the Home Secretary. She is in the eye of the storm. So borders and immigration and all that really chaotic stuff that has taken so much build-up and so much work is under her remit. That's her gig. So you know, and along with loads of other stuff and loads of other domestic issues that will all be turned upside down in a matter of weeks. So to get rid of her now and to pull someone else in to take over would be hell for the Conservatives. And they've had a ridiculously chaotic year as it is. So the last thing that Boris Johnson needs, I reckon, is a handover on one of the most high-powered roles in the country at the most critical time it could ever happen. Like, I just, you could have guessed that he wasn't willing to take that on. So I reckon that will have played a part in it too, but obviously I can't say for sure. And finally, my recommendation of the week. I like doing this. This is my favourite one I've ever done. It's the best recommendation you'll ever get. If you're getting sorted for, you know, Christmas and the holidays and sorting out people's gifts, can I please ask you to go on bookshop.org and get all your books from there? Don't go to the big boys, get them from there. And I'll tell you why, because they support local bookshops. They let them keep all the profits. So say, for example, I live up in Yorkshire at the moment for lockdown. I like to be with my family. And the nearest bookshop that we really like to use is called Imagined Things. It's in Harrogate. And if you go on bookshop.org, you can type in Imagined Things and then buy the books from there. And bookshop.org will let them keep all the profits. And not just that, anytime you buy books from that website, they contribute to keeping local bookshops alive. So they've contributed hundreds of thousands of pounds to just keep local bookshops afloat when, you know, they're facing not just lockdown, but also these big boys like Amazon are just eating up all their business. They're really reasonable prices. It's just the love and the money goes to the people who really need it. It literally makes me joyful to think about organisations like that. So please, bookshop.org, go there to get your books, keep local shops alive, keep local book dealers alive. And if you are a bookshop owner, I'm obsessed with you. I love you. Thank you for everything you do. Listen, thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you liked it. If you haven't clicked subscribe or follow, please do that now. If you want to keep supporting me and you want me to kind of keep being able to do this podcast, the best thing you can do is to become a patron. I'll leave all the details in the episode description. Just go on there and become a patron. It's, you know, it's the cost of a coffee. You chuck that in there and you can see loads of exclusive content like vlogs, opinion pieces. I quite like to share my bit slightly sassier side on there, and updates and just general stuff. It's all there, and that really helps me if you want to do that. And follow me on social media at @JuliaBell_X on everything, and you can get in touch before the next one. And that's everything. All right, I'll speak to you in the next one. Goodbye.